You're listening to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
Touch something in your car, and chances are it wasn't made by Ford, GM, or Honda. It was made by a supplier. Big companies manage large, complex supply chains with evolving dynamics. Here to talk about some of that is Professor Bill Lovejoy. His working paper, Conversations with Supply Chain Managers, shed some light on how manufacturer-supplier relations are moving. So, Professor, how did you research this paper?
Academics, as you know, see the world through frameworks and models, and periodically we have to check those against reality, just as a reality check. And so I wanted to see if our models still had fidelity. So I went to the Master of Supply Chain program here at the University of Michigan, which has an industrial advisory board, and I asked the industrial advisors if I could get the name of contacts within their company that actually negotiates these contracts with Tier 1 suppliers. And I took the list they gave me and made the contacts, set up phone interviews, and conducted the interviews, and that resulted in the paper.
One takeaway I found interesting was the question and explanation of why the manufacturers don't monitor the smaller upstream suppliers more, especially given all this heightened interest in corporate responsibility. But there are some logical reasons that you outlined.
Yes, and as you've noted, there's some risk here, like with the lead paint and the toys we saw just recently. And so the question is a legitimate one. Why wouldn't you monitor further upstream? And the way to think about this is how difficult it might be if you were trying to be the world's policeman for a complex supply chain. These tiers extend around the world. And imagine if you tried to keep track of all of that in a dynamic setting. The overhead is extremely high. In fact, in some places, I heard stories of dual books, where even if you wanted to monitor, you'd get to look at one set of books, whereas the other one is reality. So that this is more a matter of feasibility.
When it comes to bargaining power, who has it and when? It would seem that the customer, OEM, original manufacturer company, holds all the cards and allows margin to suppliers, but is that always the case?
No. In fact, in the industries I talk to, it's almost never the case. Now, if you think about it, if you've outsourced all your manufacturing, you can't make anything without relying upon a contract supplier. So now the power shifts. The only hope you have if you're the OEM is that there's a lot of contract suppliers vying for your business, but in fact, because of consolidation, sometimes there's just very few tier one suppliers capable of supplying you with the quality and volumes you require. So that generates a lot of power in the supply chain. So in a lot of these relationships, it's more a battle of equals than it is some all-powerful person dealing with a subservient supplier. If you think, for example, of Apple talking to Foxconn, Foxconn also builds for Dell and HP. So who's got the power there? If you think of Walmart talking to P&G, you know, who's got the power there? Or Dell talking to Intel, who has the power there? These are more conversations among powerful people than they are a powerful one to a subservient other.
Is this the consolidation that we've seen in the supply chain over the years kind of coming home to roost?
Yes, exactly. In fact, if you squeeze suppliers' margins too much, they go out of business. You have consolidation in the supply base, and that just gives power to them. But then as they have more power, they negotiate higher margins. That encourages entry into the supply base, and you have the cycle continuing. So right now, we have a lot of relationship management with Tier 1 suppliers. And I expect that to continue personally, but with the budding growth of suppliers in China and India, we're not sure. We could see the cycle reverse itself.
In general, how are supply chains evolving? You mentioned before you like to see if the models still fit. Do the models still fit? And what are some of the new wrinkles you're seeing?
Well, you asked two questions. One is, do the models still fit? And two, how are these things evolving? The models will have to be adjusted. Most of the models we adopted from the economic paradigm have this all-powerful person that you already alluded to. Most people see things that way, but that's not the reality we're seeing. So I think that the models will evolve more toward a bargaining of equals. And there are models for that. It's just we have to make them a little richer for this context. And then the second question you asked was, how are things evolving? And my two favorite quotes from these interviews, one is that there is no science here, but there is habit. And I think what we're going to do is start putting a science to the habit. And the second is, anything you can imagine probably takes place somewhere. And that also is true. There's this kind of sporadic reactions. It's kind of like you getting a burglar alarm after you get robbed, where someone who has been robbed yet doesn't have one. You know, so what's the best policy? And that's what we see right now. So you have some firms writing very detailed legal contracts, that's a lot of overhead. Other firms get by without them. So I think where this is evolving is to put a science to that, to know in what context which actions are appropriate. I think in all these we'll see a mixture of legal contracting, price-based things like cost escalators based on commodity prices, something like that, and then relationships and values. And our task is to determine in which context you emphasize one of those three legs of the stool versus another.
Bill Lovejoy is the Raymond T. Paring Family Professor of Business Administration and Professor of Operations and Management Science.
This has been a production of the University of Michigan News Service. Visit us on the web at www.umich.edu/news.